So good morning, everyone. It's good to see a Zendo full after a Zazen Kai yesterday. Some of you, I guess, spent the weekend sitting meditation, and others have been able to carve out enough time to come and sit this morning. Tomorrow, you may realize, is the National Day of Observing the American Bodhisattva, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. He would be 84 if he had not been assassinated in 1968. How might it have been for Dr. King, I wonder, to have grown older, even wiser, to have been involved in the last 45 years of our history? I wonder what would have happened, how he would have matured. You know, he was a young man when he died. Still, we can all recognize that Dr. King's contribution, his gift to all of us, was incalculable. He truly changed this country. So that's why I like to call him a bodhisattva, an enlightening being. One who directed light on the interconnectedness of all creations, who offered us a radical view of nonviolence in a very violent country, who named the barriers to liberation, the barriers to a loving community, and surely planted the roots of goodness, which, you may recall, is the definition of a bodhisattva in the Diamond Sutra. Naming the barriers to liberation and planting the roots of goodness. So today, in my talk, I want to encourage you by offering up Dr. King's words and how they still contribute to the fabric of our lives. And I want to link his skillfulness, his compassion, and his wisdom to our practice. And I don't mean that abstractly, but our actual practice, each one of us, today, the teachings that we care about and how they're related. If you recall, in the Diamond Sutra, a crucial passage is in the second section where Subhuti asks, "How, Lord, should one who has set out on the bodhisattva path take his stand? How should she proceed? How should she control her mind? How should she take her stand? How should he proceed? How should he control his mind?" It's good to ask ourselves that question each time we go astray. And, you know, just as an aside, this morning in Dokusan, it struck me again how typically we all have this kind of fixed idea of the good way to behave or the right way to be. And of course we're going to fall short. My goodness. How silly of us to think not. But the key is The moment we are become aware that we've shifted, that we've gone astray, in that very moment is our liberation, or the potential for our liberation. So to see that, and then to control the mind, then say, ah, okay, I've been off and coming back. No fixed idea of this quality. Because we do often go astray. All of us. We get caught up in the trivia of our lives, in the kind of loops and loops of our thoughts, old ideas, old hatreds, old fears. And then maybe we come back to the Zendo, we sit a period of Zazen, maybe we hear a scrap of a sutra. And suddenly we might wake up a little bit. And we might ask ourselves, if we sincerely wish to serve life, to serve our loved ones, and to serve the whole world, how do we set out on the path? How do we take our stand? How do we control our mind? You know, Dr. King, at the time that he was arrested and in the Birmingham jail, he was more or less abandoned by the clergy. The general clergy in this country condemned him for what they saw of the violence perpetrated on the protesters, on the marchers, and he was criticized by all of these people that he cared very much about. And he was decided to write that famous letter to the Birmingham jail, from the Birmingham jail, that he wrote. And if you have forgotten this letter, I recommend that you take a look at it. It's easily available online. He wrote, "I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And then the famous line, "We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly." I can't ever forget those lines. The interrelatedness of all communities and states. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Can we remember that today? When we survey this city, this world, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. He could never have been reading, because at that time there was not translated the Huayin Sutra, but I could think of no better take on the Huayin Sutras than, "We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality." And whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. So in that letter that he wrote, and in those words, Dr. King was teaching not just the clergy he addressed, but all of us, how to shift in a political situation, how to shift from a singular point of view to the same kind of vast vision of humanity that we find in the Mahayana Buddhist canon. What we think of, many of us think of as the Buddhist view. It's much larger than the Buddhist view. This interdependent view. It doesn't belong to any religion or any tradition. It's been there down through the ages. And it has gotten stronger as history proceeds. What was fundamental about his offering was that the Bodhisattva Dr. King let go of identity politics. Liberation for Southern blacks in the U.S. He let go of that for a wider view. You know, he began later to address poverty and the Vietnam War. And in doing that, he lost the support of many whites and conservative types within the movement who felt that he should only focus on the blacks and the rights of blacks, or as they were called at that time, Negroes. But his famous speech at Riverside Church, where he spoke up against the Vietnam War, very much changed the politics in this country. And at that time when he lost that support, it reminded me of what we see nowadays when we read the comments section of any article that we read in the newspaper or online. Even on the Buddhist blogs, you know, I'm completely shocked at the anger and vitriol, you know, of someone talking about a Buddhist interpretation of a translation of something, right? I mean, it's like, what? Venomous grudges. I wonder what he would say if he could see that, Dr. King. What he would say if he could see the hatred and anger, violent language about different political points of view. You know, it's often people have the same goal in mind, but they become vicious about the ways to go about it, the techniques to achieve some goal. It's just amazing. At his Riverside Church sermon, Dr. King said that he was calling for a worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond one's tribe, race, class, and nation, is in reality a call for an all-embracing and unconditional love for all men. That concept of a worldwide fellowship. This was, I think this was 1967. He wrote further, "When I speak of love, I'm not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I'm speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality." I'm going to read that line again. "Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality. This Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist belief about ultimate reality is beautifully summed up in the first epistle of St. John. Let us love one another, For love is God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth and not knoweth not God, for God is love. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. You know, we can listen to those words, the powerful words, and maybe you squirm a little when you hear the word love or the word God. Maybe you'd be more at ease if I said emptiness and the Tathagata. Huh? Bodhisattva. Those are our words, our tribe. Listen to the radical teachings of Martin Luther King. Radical teachings. When we look at the key section of the Diamond Sutra, I urge you to always go back to section 5. And there's in that section, there's this conversation between Subhuti and the Buddha, whether or not a Buddha can be seen by his form or shape or characteristics. In other words, can you identify a specific form that anyone, including an enlightened being, has? So I'm going to read that section. What do you think, Subhuti? Can a Tathagata be seen by virtue of the possession of distinctive features? Subhuti said, a Tathagata cannot be seen by virtue of the possession of distinctive features. Why is that? The very thing which the Tathagata has preached as the possession of distinctive features lacks any possession of distinctive features. At these words, the Lord said this to the Venerable Subhuti. Subhuti, as long as there is any distinctive feature, there is falsehood. And as long as there is no distinctive feature, there is no falsehood. Accordingly, it is by virtue of the featurelessness of his distinctive features that a Tathagata can be seen. It's a little dense. We're talking about tribe. We're talking about the relative and its relation to the absolute. Dr. King called love. The interrelatedness of all beings. When there is idea of a fixed form, there is a misconception. And as long as we deny the idea of a fixed form, there is no misconception. So in that way, we can see the form. Just a little bit, listen to that. So there's Bokashu over there. That is Bokashu. Can I see that Bokashu without seeing the non-Bokashu elements that are present in that? The non-Bokashu elements that I don't see. His parents, his culture, his family, his life, his sangha, the times he lives in, the world he lives in. All these are a part of Bokashu. I don't see those when I look at Bokashu. They're all there. Vast, dependent, co-arising of Bokashu. Prajna Paramita, the great wisdom. But when I can open my heart enough to see all those aspects of Bokashu, not just my idea of Bokushu, then I can say, hi, Bokushu. Good morning, Bokushu. Because I know that there's much more there than the form of Bokushu. Or what is called in the sutra, the sign of Bokushu. Right? So much more, always. If we can see the interrelatedness of every single thing in the universe, it naturally opens us up what we call prajnaparamita, or what Dr. King might call the loving community. The recognition that we are completely interrelated. And that's hard to see when we start looking at our political enemies. Because this is the love that Martin Luther King talked about. And this is what he called God. Listen to the resonance between the Diamond Sutra and the words of Dr. King. The Diamond Sutra tells us that we're not defined by the signs of our bodies or our minds, and tells us to not be stuck or fixed on any perception, any sign. And Dr. King tells us that we are joined by a quality called love, and that we are asked to love those we perceive as different, those we perceive as our enemies. There's a famous talk, it's difficult to read long passages, so I kind of edited out the whole passage about agape that he talks about. But then he talks about loving your enemies, and then he says, I'm very happy that I'm not saying to like your enemies. Because it is pretty difficult to like some people. Like is sentimental. And it is pretty difficult to like someone bombing your home. It is pretty difficult to like someone threatening your children. It is difficult to like congressmen who spend all their time trying to defeat civil rights. But Jesus says love them. And love is greater than like. Love is understanding, redemptive, creative, goodwill for all men. From the Diamond Sutra, it tells us we're not fixed, we're not separate, we're not permanent. And Dr. King tells us what we are, not what we're not, but what we are, connected, loved, and in fellowship. I don't see these as separate. Simply different ways to talk about the same quality. Both of them are encouraging us to let go of our sense of being separate, of having enemies, but to look closely at what is causing the conduct of those that we fear, of those we want to call our enemy, and to look carefully at our own sense of fear and anger, and find a way to enter the realm of bodhisattvas, someone who's willing to carry everyone across. That was the brilliance, that was the key that created the nonviolent revolution that Dr. King started in this country. He did indeed, like a bodhisattva, carry many of us across. But you know, a bodhisattva never stops. A bodhisattva doesn't get to the other side and then walk away. It just goes back and ferries some more across. He's not alive with us today in his physical body, But his teachings are alive. They're important for us to take these teachings in again and again. Very wise. So let me offer us a gatha. Broadway. Streams of wealthy people, streams of homeless people flowing down our Broadway. Will you bring them over? All of them? In your heart?